Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 12 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. Hi, Sean.
Hiya, how are you?
It's everyone's favourite psychotherapist. We're back.
I'm certainly my favourite psychotherapist.
And plenty of more people, I'm sure, would agree with that. We're back for more. For more information about who we are, what we do, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk. This week, our weekly topic is addiction. What are we addicted to? I'm sure we're all addicted. Well, you'll find out that we're all addicted to something, right, Sean?
I reckon we are, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so
we're all addicts.
We are. We'll dive into that soon before saying a bit about what we've been up to this week and what's been going on in the news. Before that, I just want to say a quick thank you to a reviewer in Australia. We've had our first non-US UK review.
Good.
And it's come all the way from Australia. I've got a clever little app now that tells me reviews from all over the world. And it's from a chap called Ben Byrne. Fantastic show, guys. Interesting topics, and you bring a lot of relevant and valuable ideas to the table. Keep it up.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben, from Australia. Okay. I was going to do the accent, but probably a good idea that I didn't know. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to, turn people on or off.
Alienate everyone in Australia. Yeah.
But no, we appreciate it, Ben. And yeah, wherever you are in the world, if you could spare us 30 seconds of your time, visit iTunes, leave us a review, that would be amazing, because Ben put his review on and we had a little bump in our hits in Australia. So what do you
know? That was lovely. That's
it works. Yeah. So if you like what we do, you want more people to hear it, leave a review.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Let's dive into this week, Sean. What have you been, what's been going on in your world?
I've been away for the week. It's been absolutely fabulous. Been to a place called The Barn.
The Barn.
I'm always a bit anxious about whether I should disclose the location.
You've been before, right?
Yeah. Supposed to be, we go to quite often. Wonderful place in the middle of nowhere. Lovely people own it. It's been restored beautifully. It's a lovely place to be. And it has one magical thing, is that when we're there, there is no telephone signal. So for that week, nobody wants anything, nobody needs anything. And you can get a telephone signal if you go right down the end of the field and you hang over the wall by the chickens, then you can...
You go down there and you get a load of voicemails coming in.
Yes, right, yeah. So I don't go down there very often. But it's that space. It's really lovely. So we've had a really lovely time. Weather was good. Company was good. And we did some good things.
Is it in the Lake District, isn't it?
It's about 20 minutes from Windermere.
Mm. Nice part of the world.
Yeah, beautiful. Lovely scenery.
And you unwound properly?
Really, I'm chilled. Man, am I chilled.
You come back ready for action and ready to world domination, etc.
Yeah, I'm cool.
Let's go for it.
What about you?
Yeah, I've had a nice little week. Yeah, again, I mean, I'm fully back from holiday mode now myself. So I'm back working hard. A lot of work on the go at the moment, which is great. And had a nice little fun family weekend. Went swimming with William. I haven't been swimming with him before. He used to go swimming when he was really young. But he hasn't been for like a year probably, and as I talk about him all the time, so everyone will know how old he is. He's 19 months.
And how many days is
that? don't ask me that. But it's basically like a new experience for him. It's just so cool watching him do, I mean, everything's new to him really, but it's just amazing watching him.
And swimming's so important. I mean, to be able to swim is an absolute necessity. Mm. Yeah, everybody.
So, good fun.
Yeah.
Good fun. What about the news?
My news, as forever, I'm into science and neurology, and I'm fascinated by some work that's going on at the moment about false memory syndromes. We know that we create memories by developing new neurons in the hippocampus, and they create the new circuits.
Of course, we do.
Memory. Of course,
we all know that.
We all know that. Yeah. But one of the things that we begin to realise is that the brain is creating memories from visualisation. That you can, if you visualise something long enough, it can be encoded as though it's part of your long-term memory.
Okay.
And there's some research going on. Link will go up on the site about false memory that's been implanted in mice. And when you see that, and when you look at things, and one thing they mentioned in the article is about the problems with witnesses in court. It's okay if somebody does a witness statement fairly near to an event. It's when they've gone away from the event, so they keep replaying it in their mind. And then it starts to grow and develop and change.
Mm.
And if the initial witness statement is a really good thing, because it's a marker. And you, when you go back, I mean, we can do this about any event. If you write down your experience of an event and then you come back to that description months or maybe years later, it can be very different how you remember it.
Okay.
Because you've changed it. Yeah. But that idea, and that fits in with, I'm sure at some point in the future, we're going to do one on honesty. And that idea about, you know, what is honesty and how do we remember things will be very much a part of that.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. We'll put a link up to that.
Yeah.
Fire it through to me and I'll put it on the website.
I'll do that.
Marvellous. News for me. Is it news? Is it kind of stuff going on in the UK? But the football season is up and running.
Woo!
Well, I'm a bit of a sports... Well, I wouldn't say I'm a sports nut. I'm a fan of sports.
Yep.
But yeah, the football season has started. Or the soccer, as I should say, for our American fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Soccer season is back up and running. The English Premier League has started up. So it's cool. It's all over the TV and... I'm checking my phone all the time for latest scores and all that stuff. But it's this. We need to do a podcast at some point about how healthy competition is.
Yeah.
I mean, even in my friends and I'm sure in your friends and family life. Well, I know there are actually.
Because yeah, yeah.
There's Liverpool and Everton fans, right? Because of the city where nearby us.
It's tribal.
It's split that right down the middle.
Yeah, you're either red or blue.
Yeah, exactly.
And half my family are red and half blue.
Yeah.
So they spend it when there's a the match when they're both playing together. People are shouting and screaming at the screen.
Yeah, and it's kind of mainly banter and friendly, I'm sure. But every now and again, it'll get pretty vicious. And
yeah, yeah.
That's when it's not quite so healthy, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting. We'll talk about that further. But
yeah.
Premier League, here we go. Like a bit of sports, do I? Let's go on to our topic of the week. It's about addiction and what are you addicted to? Now, I'm going to start, Sean, by asking you a question. What's the difference between an addiction and a habit?
Well, I don't think that there is, but in psychology and medicine, what we would say is a habit is something that you have a choice over and you can change if you want to. And an addiction is something that you cannot change. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that addictions exist in that sense. I think that everything is a habit.
Okay.
Yeah. The idea for me is that genetically there will be a very, very, very small percentage of people who have a predisposition to certain kinds of behaviours. But the vast, 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 vast majority of people do have control. They just don't know that they have control and they have choice. They don't know that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will work with people who perhaps are very, very overweight, and they will tell me that their metabolism is different to mine, and that every time they look at a cream bun, it goes on their hips. And it becomes very controversial, because if you say to somebody, this isn't an addiction, this is a set of choices that you're making, they don't want to hear that. It's easier for it to be an addiction, because when it's an addiction, it's like it's someone else's fault. When it's a habit, it's my fault.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a very controversial area. And if we started talking about some regular addictions, I'm sure there would be people out there that would start to get a bit aerated, because they'd say, but it's not like that for me. But from my point of view, we are all habit-driven. Yeah,
yeah, that's why we all get up in the morning. I mean, yeah, I'm addicted to getting out of bed at 6:30. But, well, maybe not actually, because it's my son waking me up then, so I probably wouldn't get up then if he wasn't screaming his head off.
If you think about your system... Yeah, you've got a body, and your body exists in a chemical environment. All the hormones and all the endorphins that work in your system are all there, and they are balanced at a level that you understand. And that balance has come from the kind of things that you eat and you drink.
Yeah.
It comes from the kind of things that you do with your body, as in exercise and stuff like that. But also, it primarily comes from your emotional states. And the way that we think and the way that we feel affects our body chemistry all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that from my point of view, and this is the point really, is that all of us have a chemical normal. Now, your chemical environment is different to mine. Yeah. But both of us have what we see as normal. And if for some reason that level of chemistry drops down so that we don't feel normal anymore, we will do what we need to lift our chemistry back up to our normal so that we feel okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's true whether our chemistry is driven by moaning, whether it's driven by happiness, whether it's driven by money, whether it's driven by exercise. If we're denied the ability to have a chemical normal, we will go into withdrawal because we're not maintaining the habit. when we, I guess when we begin to see ourselves as not having a choice, we could start to describe it as an addiction. But for me, an addiction is simply a habit that we're not taking account of.
There's always choice, right?
Yeah, from my point of view. Other people are going to argue with that. That's
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So what are you addicted to?
I was thinking about that when we were talking about this. At different times in my life, having come through the sixes, I've been addicted to all kinds of things that I shouldn't be, you know. Uh-huh. And I've got over all that kind of stuff and the smoking and all that kind of stuff. I suppose that for me these days, I'm addicted to life. I'm addicted to that sense of being alive and feeling the excitement of being alive. And I do drive for that excitement. I drive for challenge and for some levels of newness. I get bored if and my levels of excitement chemistry drop if I'm not stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of things that stimulate me maybe wouldn't stimulate another person. We've talked about the way that you live in a very active world.
Yeah.
And my world is much more passive. I'm much more excited by ideas than I am.
Yeah, so you're not jumping out of planes and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. That wouldn't... my addictions wouldn't be around that. But I'm intrigued by people's minds, and I'm so stimulated and fascinated by what goes on inside other people's minds and how it works,
mm-hmm.
that to me that is just so exciting, and that excitement is chemistry that is addictive to me.
Cool. Yeah. I was trying to think of what I'm addicted to aside from the usual oxygen and water.
Pretty important though.
Yes, yeah, I like those two. I'm not going to kick that
when they're together. You get fizzy water. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I'm kind of addicted to information as well. I'm one of these guys that the first thing they do in the morning is pick up the phone and check what's been going on in the world and interesting things.
Yeah, I know it's true that if I need some information, if I need an app, if I need something technical, you're right there on it, and you know what it is. I can say to you, I want something to do this, this, and this. You go, oh, you need that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a drive within you to do that.
To stay up to date, to yeah. keep learning.
Yeah. But if you think about somebody who goes to church every day, this is a real thing for me, because I work with people like this, someone who goes to Mass every morning. Every morning they get up, they walk to the chapel of the church, and they go through the service. And that service, the process of going through the ritualistic behaviours of the service and the rituals of getting up and going to the church, create a chemistry inside them that creates a normal. And if for some reason they can't do that, they go into withdrawal. So their addiction, the levels of chemistry in their body are dropping, and they need to renew it to get it back up again.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that's important to realise, and when you're starting to realise the habit performing potentials of our system, is that it's completely neutral. The system doesn't care whether your habit normal, your chemical habit normal, is positive or negative. So that people do create negative ways of being that may be quite abusive or quite harmful, but for them it's their normal.
Well, just going back to this normal then, because the normal line isn't a regular line, is it? With addiction, that line can go up and up and up with things yeah. maybe like drug addiction.
Certainly.
Right.
Certainly.
So you start, your normal line might be a puff on a cigarette, then it might become a puff on a special kind of cigarette,
and that might, more special kind
of cigarette. It might move up and up to all sorts of crazy
yeah, that's true.
Concoctions.
There's one of the things that we know about how the brain functions, it's to do with the limbic system and a little organ called the amygdala.
Yeah.
Is that addictive behaviours, what we say is addictive behaviours, get stronger over time. So that if I was looking at domestic violence, which is actually an addictive behaviour,
mm-hmm.
what happens is you'll get somebody, and it isn't always the man, you get somebody who starts off with a disgruntled kind of feeling, and those disgruntled feelings become a louder voice, they become a shout, they become a punch and a kick and a slap over time as it gradually gets bigger and bigger, it gets hotter and hotter. The demands of the system to create more of the chemistry are there.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's true of anything that we would say is addictive. It gets more.
Right.
Yeah.
So that normal doesn't, it's kind of angled up a little bit maybe.
Yeah, yeah. If I've got a high feeling in my normal, like I'm going to church and I get a really good feeling, then the natural propensity of my system is to create more of that good feeling. So I might end up going to church twice a day to get an even higher level to feel even better in myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it might work the other way around. Say I'm a self-harmer and I cut myself with a razor blade. And I'm using that as my addictive cycle. And that's a very real thing. What happens is people build a level of tension. And then when they cut, the brain releases all the endorphins that make them feel good. That's the addiction. That's what they're addicted to.
Yeah. Wow.
So that I might go for deeper cuts or more cuts to get more of that chemistry. Yeah. And it's crazy, isn't it? Because we would see someone cutting themselves or someone taking heroin or cocaine as addictive, but someone going to church, we say, well, how can that be an addiction? But it's exactly the same mechanism. Exact same mechanism. When people talk about being addicted to sex, what they're talking about is they're addicted to the chemical environment that the sexual activity creates within them. That's what they're going for.
Right.
And in that sense, the behavior of a habit or addiction is the end result. It's not the cause. It's the symptom of the cause.
Yes? Yeah, well, this is a big issue, isn't it? It raises its head in the news every month or two. People will have another push in the drug field for decriminalization and treatment of drug abuse as a health issue rather than a criminal issue where people should be locked up for it.
Mm.
And I mean, it seems quite obvious to me that it should be treated as a health issue. You know, if you really want to get rid of it in a person, their addiction needs to be fixed rather than just locking them away for, well, they're probably going to get drugs in jail anyway. Apparently it's quite easy. I don't know. I've heard that it is.
If you think about it, in our society, it's not that long ago that homosexuality was seen as a crime. Mm-hmm. Suicide was seen as a crime.
Well, there might be some people listening in the world where in their country it is.
And maybe there are people listening that feel that those things are crimes. And the issue is the ability to do something from choice, is that a habit? You know, is there a point where I say, I don't have any choice about this, therefore it's an addiction? And it's like, I don't believe that. My experience, both personally and professionally, is that people start off with the concept that they're addicted and they can't do anything about it. And that's the magic word, is can't, because as soon as someone says to me, I can't do that, they're right, because in psychology we know so clearly that thoughts become things. You can't avoid it. As soon as you start to believe something, you start to create what happens next. Mm-hmm. So if I believe there's nothing I can do about this, then you're right, there's nothing you can do about it. And it's making that switch of realizing that I have choice. Once I've done that, then I can choose to create the habits that I want. I can choose to create the addictions that I want, if you like. So I'm doing it now. Every morning when I go out and do my running thing.
Yeah.
What I'm doing is because my body still in week 5 isn't saying, oh, whoopee, this is really good, I love doing this. It hasn't made the switch yet. Yeah, I'm still trying to work with my body to get it to the point where it jumps out of bed going, woo, I'm going for a run.
Getting closer.
Yeah, I am. But there are times in my runs where my body's saying, I don't know why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I have to really push myself to keep going. And yet I know there's a point where the body chemistry will change and there will be a huge sense of enjoyment coming from what I'm doing. At the moment, it's still a bit of a struggle. Yeah?
Let us know when it switches. Yeah, yeah.
I feel good when I get back because I've got the satisfaction of I've done it.
Yeah.
But I'm not at the point where I'm really kind of enjoying the process. Yeah. But I know that if I teach my body persistently and consistently, we talk about the 30-day and the 90-day rule, and I know that if I keep at it at the end of my 90 days, I will be in, I'll be doing it, and it would just be what I do. It would be my new habit.
Okay, well, we'll come on to the length of time it can take to kick a habit or an addiction. Initially, though, if someone comes to you and it's obvious that they have an addiction which is unhealthy, should we talk about smoking or weight loss? Which one should we go for?
Just take your pick. I mean,
How long does it take initially for them to accept and to say that, yes, I have an issue and that it needs, I'm addicted?
Most people only start to address bad habits. I'm not going to use the word addiction.
Uh-huh.
They only start to address bad habits because other people tell them. You know, the news says you shouldn't be doing this, or the partner says, you know, you're getting a bit of a fat lad, you know, you need to lose it, kind of stuff. And very often it's driven by other people. But once you start to do that, people tend to fail in their attempts because they're trying to do what someone else wants. And statistically, you're looking at something like 5 to 7 attempts at, say, stopping smoking before you actually get your head around it and you do it.
Right.
Yeah, that's quite common.
Okay.
And I'm sure anybody that's listening here that's smoked or is smoking will identify the amount of times that they needed to try or are trying to stop. But you're looking at 5 to 7 times. But that would also be true of someone trying to escape domestic violence too. You'd be the same kind of statistics, 5 to 7 times.
Wow.
Yeah. For them to break out of that habit circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eating is an interesting one because people come to me and they say, could you hypnotize me to stop me eating? And I say, well, no, I couldn't do that because if I do that, you're going to die. Yeah.
yeah.
And the thing about hypnotism and eating particularly is that because eating is such a fundamental part of what we need to do, you have to be very careful in what you're doing with it. So it has to be something where you're encouraging the person to be mindful about what they're putting in their body and mindful about what they're doing with their body to change their weight situation. Because if you did hypnotize someone to stop eating.
I haven't heard you talk about hypnosis for a while. Is it something that you still help?
I have usually, you know, 3-4 clients a week that I've got in hypnosis.
Okay.
Or hypnoanalysis I do as well,
right,
which is a longer kind of process.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Hypnosis is a very powerful thing, not in the sense of making people jump around and crow like chickens, but what you're doing in a hypnotic induction is you're teaching somebody where the mechanisms are inside them to create change. So positive hypnotherapy is about teaching somebody to do something so they develop a life skill. And then once they finish that process, they're in control of it and they go off and do it. They don't need you anymore as the therapist. They can process it themselves.
Yeah, so you wouldn't just hypnotize someone and say, when you wake up, you won't have another cigarette. You're not going to smoke ever again.
Well, there's two ways of doing hypno with smoking. If you look at smoking and you try and make an aversion, so that what you do is you convince the person if they put a cigarette in their mouth, it's going to taste like old socks or burning tires. You know, you can put something in. But if you work analytically, what you're looking at is, why does the person smoke? So if you take out the reason why somebody smokes, then the need to smoke goes away. Yeah?
Right.
Yeah? And it's understanding that bit of the habit-forming mechanism, because it's not enough just to take the nicotine out of your body. If you've got an emotional need to smoke, you can go into rehab with alcohol, drugs, nicotine, anything, as many times as you want. If you don't take away that causal thing inside you, then the symptom will always come back. So, I mean, in terms of habits, it's much easier to look at ourselves in terms of what is it I've learned? What is it that I would like to learn? So like, who am I? Who'd I like to be? And okay, now what do I need to do about it? It doesn't matter what the issue is, whether we want to label it addictions or habits. To me, that's kind of a meaningless difference.
Yeah, but it takes real effort, huh? And guts, and yeah. It takes time.
Well, we know from the work we do in Live in the Present that it takes 30 days to make an initial neural shift in the brain. And then it takes another 60 days to complete the process. And that's why people don't change. It's because they don't go through the 90 days of persistent, consistent activity to create what they want.
Yeah, what's the Apollo story about the Apollo missions, about the upside down?
Apollo guys, when they're being trained to go up, they want to teach them to live with total disorientation. So they give them sets of goggles that are fixed on. They have to wear them for a month with a prism in that turns the world upside down. And they're learning to, their cornflakes kind of up in the air. Everything's inside out. So what happens is that between day 25 and day 30, depending on the individual, the neural net shifts and flips the world the right way up. So when they take the goggles off, the world's upside down.
Wow.
And then that takes another 25, 30 days for it to flip again. And there's an understanding in that. And that's the key of things like sports psychology and about change psychology, is that to change something, we know that you have to be persistent and consistent for 30 days, and your hippocampus in your brain will create new neurons that create the circuit for this new behavior. But if you don't be persistent and consistent, then the circuit breaks down.
Yeah.
And you don't make the change.
It's just what, well, plenty of New Year's resolutions are made, aren't they, and unkept.
For that reason.
And addictions.
Yeah, but if you get into the 30-day, 90 days, then yeah, that's where you go. You change. What about this then? A guy wants to learn to play the piano, so he's got a piano. Never played it before, and he starts off da 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 da, and he's learning where the dots are on the lines, and he's learning to play the music. And if he does it consistently for 30 days, and then he does it consistently for 90 days, then we know he's got the skill circuits built into his system, so he can now start to build on it. There's something called the 10,000 hour rule, where if you look at anybody who's highly successful in their world, either, you know, scientifically, as a musician, whatever, then most people will apply the 10,000 hour rule. They've been doing it for 10,000 hours, you know, yeah, an act or anything. And that's when it really, really gets to be a total and utter habit where you can just do it forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking about, but you need the 90 days in first. 10,000 hours is a big one.
And you've got to want to do it as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah. There is a whole area in that we could get into maybe another time. You know, if you think about a Nazi death camp, the people that went in there that didn't want to run those places or to do the things they did ended up doing them. Why did they do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and learn to accept that. And that's part of the same kind of process.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and that's what I mean about the system is neutral. Once the habit is there, yeah, which is a bit scary when you look at it like that.
A little bit. So,
yeah.
Interesting, okay.
So the issue here is, because people always say, okay, what's the self-help bit? The self-help bit is, look at yourself, do you like your habits? If you don't like your habits, do something about changing it. And that may mean seeing someone like me, it may mean reviewing your life and going to the gym, there may be all kinds of things that you need to do, but it's you taking responsibility for you and not pretending that someone else is responsible for your habit. You know, I'm like this because my mother dropped me on my head or my father put my hat on back to front, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I am responsible for me. I'm responsible for my habits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned earlier as well, as a little takeaway, that sometimes we only kind of come to these realizations when someone tells us about it.
Yeah.
If our partner's kind of plucky enough to say, you know, you've put on a bit of weight there. Not that they have, I'm sure.
So, you have to, certainly haven't. You have to be a brave person.
Yeah, I certainly haven't. Yeah. But I mean, this kind of links in with the online abuse stuff. I mean, people are having a go at people online for the sake of it, because there's no comeback quite often online. But it takes a bit of bravery sometimes to say to a friend or a loved one that they need to seek help, doesn't it?
Mm.
No, I'm not advocating that people go out and start shouting willy-nilly at what friends' issues may be, but yeah, you need a bit of bravery there as well, don't you?
Well, I think that maybe we should look at our next cast as being issues about telling the truth. You know, is it appropriate to, you know, where does honesty end? You know?
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Is honesty always the best policy?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, you know, when your partner comes down and says to you, what does my backside look like in these trousers? What do you say? Whew. You know, it's a tough one, isn't it? You look wonderful, darling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I owe Bethan an apology, my wife. Apparently on this podcast, well, she listens to them.
Hi, B.
Well, I think I've said before, she listens to them as she's kind of dropping off at night. So she only tends to get about 10 minutes in.
So she won't hear this bit.
So there's no point in me apologising anyway if I've shown her in a bad light in the past. But if you are listening, Bethan, I love you. You're amazing. We'll put a picture of her on the show notes so everyone can see how lovely she is.
That'd be good.
She's a good lady, my wife.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Teacher, good person.
Yeah.
I hope that does it. I hope that takes me out of the hole.
Yeah. He's a nice guy, be honest, isn't he?
Right, let's wrap it up, Sean. Interesting topic, wonderful. But let's have a resource of the week from you. I've got Guardian Eyewitness written down here.
Yeah. But it's something that I use quite a lot. And the pictures are stunning. And you can get it online, the Guardian newspaper. But they gather the most amazing photographs from all over the world about events that are happening at the moment. You know, they say like a picture tells 1,000 words.
Yeah.
It really, really tunes me in and makes me think about the thing, especially when you look at some of the things that are perhaps very joyful. Or perhaps it's a disaster, but you get into the feeling of the situation in the picture. And the pictures are stunning.
Yeah, really, you know, good quality. Yeah, I know you always turn your iPad around and say, look at this.
Look at this, look at this. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I've seen that before. And there's another one, there's a similar one called the Big Picture by the Boston Globe.
All right, yeah.
Which I think it's every day they put a theme, they have a theme, and they just show a load of amazing photos.
Yeah.
And sometimes, yeah, it'll be disaster that's happened and it's quite sad. And sometimes it'll be something inspiring.
Yeah.
The recent one I looked at was shots from the Tour de France.
All right, yeah.
Some cool photos. I've got to go and watch that one day.
Yeah.
Flying past, I'll go to Paris and see that coming in.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, brilliant.
My resource of the week is a website called Upworthy.
Upworthy?
Yeah,
Upworthy. sounds like a place.
It does actually. Sounds like a cool kind of place. Yeah. It would be a good place, but it's a great website, and it basically, it's just a great place to look for amazing things going on in the world, generally video-based. So it tries to give the same kind of prominence to viral videos of, like, squirrels on skateboards and crazy, yeah, but to interesting, positive things in the world. So that, one of them recently I saw was a news anchor in the US who kind of had received some negative criticism from someone that had been watching the show about her size because she was a little bit overweight, and she took this person on head on at the end of one of the shows, and it was amazing. Like, she didn't hold back. She was polite but amazing, and she was proud of what she was. But amazing videos every day. And if you subscribe to the email, I think every few days you get an email from them just sends cool stuff to your inbox.
Yeah.
Upworthy.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, I'll have a go at that. That sounds, sounds good.
Have a look at it.
Reminds me of that gorilla doing the Phil Collins song.
Yeah, that was like the squirrel on the skateboard moment. But hey, we can't help but watch these things, can we? Right, so Sean, thanks. That was good. Good chatting to you.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
We'll wrap up now. But yeah, for more information about this week's show, visit our website, liveinthepresent.co.uk. There'll be links to all the things we've spoken about. You can also find links to Sean and I on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. Final reminder, if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would have been amazing. Spare us 30 seconds of your time. And it really helps to kickstart and kind of spread our word around the world.
Well, thanks to all those that have. It's been really good.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It's really amazing to see. And that's it. So next week, we've kind of done it on the hoof, but we're going to be talking next week about honesty. Is honesty the best policy? So I haven't even had a chance to think about that one, but...
You have to be honest.
I must be honest. Yeah. Or maybe not. Who knows? Yeah. Sean, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Bye, everybody.
Yeah, see you, everyone. Thanks a lot.